Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and happy Saturday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you so much for being here. And let me just tell you, it's great to be chatting with you guys one-on-one again. Obviously, we've had a tremendous group of guests all season long, all week long, and just getting to chat after this game with Justice and Paul Brettel and Mike Wall and Tyler and Nathan. I don't know for you guys if it's been sort of therapeutic and just getting all of their different takes on everything. I know for me, it certainly has been, but I'm also really excited to just kind of go through a lot of different stuff that's happened this week. Our main topic today is going to be my grades for Packers-Eagles. And I want to apologize because it's Saturday. The game was a week ago. And as you know, I usually like to try to get these out Wednesday, maybe Thursday at the latest. And just ever since I got sick and the holidays came, I've just felt like I've been behind the eight ball ever since. So I've been a little bit behind on these. So my apologies. This will be our last grading of a game for the season, unfortunately, until we get to preseason next year. But usually I like to make these a little bit more time sensitive. So my apologies for that. I still think there's a lot of interesting things to take away as we sort of continue to wrap up. I'm going to, use this kind of weekend and everything and just kind of this week to wrap everything up. And very, very soon we'll start looking into free agency and eventually the draft and all those different offseason topics. We've also have a variety of different things that I haven't had the opportunity to go over yet. Some coaching changes, some, press conference notes specifically from Brian Gutekunst. So we're going to get to all of that today as well. So make sure to stick around for everything. Before we get there, brand new Pack-A-Day podcast member, Fire Up Tommy. Fire Up Tommy, thank you so much for signing up. If you haven't checked those out yet, make sure to do so. If you want to make sure you're getting Q&As all throughout the year, make sure to become a member and you'll get access to those. Also, still going to be bonus content, and I'll start probably doing an extra video coming up here. Maybe not this week, but probably in the next couple weeks or so. I have a feeling you're still going to get some Ross Uglum content from time to time and a variety of different things. So keep an eye out for that, but still a great time to become a Pack-A-Day podcast YouTube member. Also, before we jump into anything else from a Packers standpoint, I would be remiss not to say just a couple words about the legendary, probably doesn't even do it justice, Bob Uecker. And for anyone that's been in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, a fan of baseball, Mr. Baseball, of course, obviously a variety of different mediums, entertainment, wrestling, talk shows, you name it, movies, Bob Uecker did a little bit of all of it. I can't think of a more awesome thing that could happen at the end of your life than to have a crap ton of people lay Miller Lights and Miller High Lifes and baseball memorabilia outside of a statue that is made of you outside of a baseball stadium. That's about as badass as it gets. It was a tough day. It was a really tough day. I grew up a Packer fan, as you know. I grew up a football guy. I hated baseball growing up. It wasn't really until college and the Ricky Weeks, Ryan Braun, Prince Fielder, Corey Hart, JJ Hardy team really captured my imagination. And as it did, I fell in love with the sport. I fell in love with the team and really finally got access to Bob Uecker a little bit later than everyone else did. At least that had, he obviously started announcing the 70s, 80s, and through those eras and into the 90s. And I didn't, get him until the 2000s. There's all the amazing home run calls. There's all the amazing just moments that he was there for. He had this beautiful ability to have all of this passion and emotion that came out in everything that he did, while also letting the moment breathe and speak for itself. It's just this beautiful comedy plus entertainment plus the love and passion that he had for the game, plus actually being a plus Hall of Fame announcer. If he wasn't funny, right? If he wasn't entertaining, and if he didn't have any of that, just his pure ability to call a baseball game was second to none. And you put all of that together into one human being, it's just ridiculous. Some people just have it, and he had it. He exuded it. It was, you could just tell every single time that he was on. And for all the amazing home run calls and all the things like that, that I will very much remember, the big plays, the double plays, the get ups, the get out of here's gones, all of those sort of things. I will always remember, and I think some others will as well, the best Uke was when they were down 13-0 or 13-1. And it was just one of those, you know, game, you know, 97 of the year. It's a hot summer day and the Brewers are down 13-1 and Uke's just on one, right? The storytelling and just all of it, all the jokes, all of the, you know, and his ability to weave it in between the game, still make the game exciting, even though it's a 13-1 ball game. I remember distinctly, there was a trip that I had going from I was in college at the time. I think it was in Oshkosh, driving from Oshkosh, going to Stevens Point, and just listening to, there was when they were starting, I think they started 26-10 that season, if I remember correctly. Maybe it was 24-10, one of those two. And I was just listening to Uke in the car and obviously going back and forth and everything. And just remember on that car ride, just dying laughing on about three different occasions in the car. If anyone would have been driving past me, they would have been like, what the heck is wrong with that guy? And just dying of laughter. And of course that happened on numerous occasions as well. There's so much positive things that I could say about him, but summer baseball, all of it will not be the same without him. A legendary career, a legendary human, and somebody that I am going to miss greatly as the soundtrack of summer. And there's nobody like him. I tried my best to really take the extra moments to really, you know, just breathe in the moment and not take it for granted, especially these last couple of years. It's still ridiculously hard to do. But those last couple calls, you know, that, you know, just tried to, you know, make the most of them as you kind of heard him, whether you're just, again, driving around town or whatever you were doing. I'm going to miss him greatly. And he had, like I said, a legendary career. And I know for those of you who've been impacted by him as well, yeah, amazing memories. It's been fun listening to all the amazing memories that have come out this week already. But Bob Uecker, rest in peace, my friend, and a legendary human, a legendary career. I'll leave it at that. All right, let's get to some Packers news and notes. Sorry for the you know, people here that are just Packers fans, just football fans, and are not baseball people. But when you're Mr. Baseball and have the impact on Wisconsin and Milwaukee and the entire area here that Bob Uecker did, and it's a sports story, I'll just say sorry if you're not into that, but I felt like I had to do it. So Packers news, Jason Rebrovich is out as defensive line coach. This is something that Justice Mosqueda and I had talked about on a couple different occasions. It's always an impossible task to really judge a position coach. I say this all the time. We don't get the all 22 of the coaches in practice. We don't know what they're saying. We don't know the impact that they're having. We don't know what they're telling the players to do and how they're responding to that. We don't know if the players love the coaches, hate the coaches, if there's a lot of friction there, if there's no friction there. We don't know any of that. We can see results, but that's not necessarily always indicative of how the coach is. It's a pretty good tell, but not always. But how I always view it is I look at it as who is meeting expectations, who is exceeding expectations, and who is falling short of expectations in the room that you're responsible for. And if you look all throughout that defensive line, whether it's edge or interior defender, Kenny Clark fell below expectations. Devontae Wyatt probably still a little bit below expectations. Carl Brooks below expectations. Colby Wooden below expectations. TJ Slayton probably about at expectations for me. So one at, everyone else below. At defensive end, Rashawn Gary below expectations. Preston Smith was below before he got traded. LVN below expectations. Kingsley Igbari well below expectations. You know, you could put Aaron Mosby maybe at expectations, and then maybe Brenton Cox above expectations. So of the entire defensive line, edge rusher and interior defender, the only one I think you can really make an argument for that was above our expectations going into the year was Brenton Cox. Everyone else, most of them below expectations, a couple meets expectations here or there. But if that's your body of work as a defensive line coach overall, that's clearly not great. And I had heard, you know, from Justice that there were maybe some in the building that didn't think that Jason Rebrovich was ready for that position. Who knows? I don't know. This was the one, I will say this, this is the one coach going into the offseason that I felt was really going to be actually on the hot seat. Wasn't Matt LaFleur, wasn't, you know, Brian Gutekunst as a GM, not Jordan Love as the quarterback. The actual coach here, though, that I'll say is that, that I thought would be in jeopardy was Jason Rebovich. Now, some people might point to Rich Bisaccia. I would understand it. I really would. I don't think the overall three-year ROI in Rich Bisaccia has been anything to write home about. In fact, it's been still an overall net negative, in my opinion. But I think Matt does have to be a little bit careful with coordinators. He's already had three special teams coordinators, including Rich Bisaccia. He's fired two already in Sean Menenga and in Mo Drayton. So if he fires a third, he will have fired three special teams coordinators in his first, what, seven seasons? That's not usually great. He's also on his third defensive coordinator already, firing the previous two in Mike Pettine and Joe Barry. He's on his second offensive coordinator, the first one not due to a fault of his own. Nathaniel Hackett was somebody that got promoted to a head coach, and then that didn't work out. Didn't work out with the Jets either, but we digress. That was not Matt's fault. And then so he hasn't fired any offensive coordinators, but the offensive coordinator is also a little bit less of a... It's harder to judge, harder to gauge it because it's Matt LaFleur's offense and everything like that, right? So the amount of special teams and defensive coordinators that he's gone through already, and the fact that he's had eight coordinators, through his tenure in Green Bay, adding a ninth to that list because you fire Rich Bisaccia, you start having coordinators that start wondering, do I really want to work with Matt LaFleur? As soon as there's an inkling that things go wrong, he's probably going to fire me. And that's kind of been the case. So I do think he probably needs to hang on to Bisaccia a little bit longer here. I think this next year really is a make or break for Bisaccia. But if certainly, listen, if you want to make the argument that they should or should have moved on from Bisaccia, I fully understand it. I really do. I'm not going to say you're wrong or anything like that. I get it. Trust me, I do. I don't expect it to happen. I didn't expect it to happen. And I'm still in that boat. So Jason Rebovich was the one. Now, as far as his replacement, they are going to interview, I think they did interview Aaron Whitecotton, who's had some experience as a defensive line coach with the Jets. Again, judge it as you will. I think the Jets have had some pretty darn good defensive lines. Has obviously worked with Robert Saleh, probably trying to get ahead of it before Robert Saleh gets a job somewhere. And, you know, Whitecotton gets hired probably with Saleh. But if Green Bay can make that work, it would seem to make some sense. I don't know if they're bringing in other candidates as well. As of now, I have not seen or heard of any, but it seems like they have a good candidate right at the forefront. And we'll see what move they ultimately make and who they ultimately bring into that position. Of course, we also heard and found out this week from Matt LaFleur that Tom Clements is going to be leaving and retiring. Well-deserved. First of all, what a unbelievable career for Tom Clements and what he's been able to do mentoring quarterbacks in Green Bay. Of course, was an offensive coordinator for a bit as well. And he's going to be missed. I am very intrigued as to who is going to be the replacement. Connor Lewis, assistant quarterbacks coach Sean Mannion, is an offensive assistant and is in the building already and has quarterbacks coach written all over him. And then, of course, there is Luke Getsy, who is the former Packers quarterbacks coach, recently offensive coordinator for the Bears and the Raiders. He could make some sense. He was just in the building, or probably still is in the building, as a consultant, and it could make some very logical sense just to bring him in as the quarterbacks coach. But there are multiple options. Dan Orlovsky said he wants the job. I'll be totally honest. I would have a phone call with Dan Orlovsky. I'm not saying he'd be my favorite. I'm not saying that they should go and hire him, but I would definitely have a phone call with him. I think he's a really smart dude. I think he can relate to players well, at least, you know, how he relates even just to the audience, on all of his shows. Again, I'm not saying that that's the direction that they should go in by any means, but I would definitely at least have a conversation with him. But yeah, they have plenty of options already. They'll probably bring in some external people, I would think, to interview as well. And that's going to be a very important position. As you know, and as I know, Jordan Love and his progression is the number one A most important aspect of 2025. There's second to none. He's got to play better than he did in 2024. And I know Matt LaFleur, Brian Gutekunst, both bullish on his overall play, especially fighting through injuries. But I think he clearly needs to play better. I think some of the fundamentals and the mechanics need to be better, needs to be better from a decision-making standpoint. And I think a new quarterbacks coach is first of all, going to have very big shoes to fill. It's an impossible replacement, but they're going to bring some new ideas to the table. And if they can unlock Jordan a little bit more, that'd be awesome. Not necessarily getting my hopes up that they could be, come in and, bring something new to the table that Tom Clements didn't already know, but you never quite know. And maybe there is some opportunity and possibility there, but we will of course keep an eye on that as well. Some other Packers coaches who have some opportunities: Derek Ansley interviewed for the Falcons defensive coordinator job. We'll see if he gets that. Jeff Hafley, Jets head coach, he finished that interview on Friday, and Adam Stenovich is going to interview for the Bears head coach position. I think the main one that actually has an opportunity of potentially happening here would be Derek Ansley as the Falcons defensive coordinator. I don't actually think any of these are going to get the job. I would expect Ansley, Hafley, and Stenovich all back. Hafley would, of course, be the really brutal blow to Green Bay. You never know with the Jets. You never quite know what they're going to do. I think Hafley is deserving. I think you should be in that conversation. And it would not stun me one iota if Jeff Hafley went to an interview in New York and absolutely crushed it. I mean, he is an impressive dude. He blew Green Bay away with their, you know, with the interview. And I could easily see him going to New York and crushing that interview. Whether or not they would hire him and those sort of things, I don't think so. My gut tells me he'll probably stay in Green Bay as defensive coordinator and not get that head coaching job, but you never quite know. And those are all going to be worth monitoring, especially Jeff Hafley, because that would change things very, very quick in Green Bay if Jeff Hafley did in fact get that head coaching job. And then we'll keep an eye on Stenovich and Derek Ansley as well. Well, unfortunately, Green Bay season is over, but that doesn't mean that the winning on Prize Picks needs to come to an end. The divisional round is one of the best weekends in sports, and right now on Prize Picks, you can win up to 1,000 times your money, and that's because Prize Picks is the best place to get real money action while watching the playoffs. Prize Picks also offers a variety of weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts, and don't forget that there are plenty of other sports available to play as well, and it's never a bad time to get in on the basketball action. This week, I'm going with both Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson to put on a show, Saquon Barkley to continue his ridiculous tear, and Amon-Ra St. Brown to once again dominate with multiple receptions. The best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup by using code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. Run your game. All right, let's get to Goody's press conference really quick. The one thing that I asked him, because he initially talked about that, you know, he was asked about wide receiver one and what they went through at wide receiver. And he said, well, right now we've had some injuries that we're monitoring. And of course, that's Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs. But when he brought up the Doubs situation and kind of the injuries, I wanted to ask him, are there any injuries that you think are going to linger into the 2025 season? And thankfully, he said only Christian Watson, which we already knew that's going to be somewhere around week 12 to week 14, probably for Christian next year, that he can come back. But I was a little bit concerned about the head injuries for Romeo Doubs, or if there were any other injuries that we didn't know about that could linger in the next season. And thankfully, there are not. So that was a piece of good news. He also mentioned that there's no disconnect between Jaire Alexander and the organization, but that there's definitely frustration on both sides that just Jaire hasn't been able to get out there. We'll talk about my, you know, kind of gut reactions to all of this, but his sort of GM speak on Jaire Alexander was very interesting. He said he was super fired up about Quay Walker and Devontae Wyatt and what they did in 2024 when they were out on the field. They have two very big decisions on fifth-year options. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. He said he thought Keyshawn Nixon played really well, really, really well on the outside, and felt like the outside cornerback room solidified itself when Valentine and Nixon were on the outside and Javon Bullard was in the slot. So he seems rather confident about that. I know that's going to be immediately taken with a frustration because people don't like Keyshawn Nixon. I agree with him in the fact that I thought he really took to that outside corner position. I do think it's his best spot. I love that Keyshawn wants to focus on it. I do think that Keyshawn Nixon can be a starting corner. I really like starting outside corner. I do. I think you need a really good other corner. I don't know that Carrington Valentine is quite there, although I do like Carrington outside of this last game quite a bit. I think he's a good player, but I do think Nixon can have a role. And I do think if he's, you know, you're 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th best defender, and you're maybe your 5th best defensive back or 4th best defensive back, I think you're more than good. I'm not saying you should be a number one, you know, try to be a shutdown corner on the outside. That's probably not going to go very well for you, but I think he's a lot better than people are giving him credit for. And I do think the move to outside corner actually helped him quite a bit, and he actually looked a decent amount better out there than he did in the slot, in my opinion. Goody mentioned that he would like Brandon McManus back in 2025. Also said that Josh Myers had his best season and that Jordan trusts him very much. Going to be an interesting decision there. And then the really kind of interesting note at the end is he kind of made a sort of a, not a line in the sand, but just like sort of set the tone for the entire franchise by saying it's time to ramp up the sense of urgency and it's time to compete for championships. And this is always going to be met with like some form of like, well, what were you trying to do before? Or why was this, you know, were you not trying to win championships the previous year? Or like, yeah, yeah. To me, I love setting the tone. I love it. It's basically he's telling the organization, hey, it's time to grow up. It's time to be a championship contender and we've got work to do. I love that from Goody. I really do. I don't look at it any other way. They were clearly trying to win a championship these past couple seasons and did everything they could to try to make that happen. Didn't work out, but I love that Goody setting the tone and saying, hey, it's got to be better. And we'll also see though, I'm interested to see with Goody, does he take his own advice? He says it's time to ramp up the sense of urgency. I'm assuming he's going to be active in free agency. I think we know that, right? How active and what he's going to do will remain to be seen. But taking a, you know, developmental, I'll say, I won't say project, I'll say developmental player in the first round of the draft would lend you to believe that's not exactly the greatest sense of urgency. If you want a sense of urgency, let's put some urgency in this. Let's draft some guys that are ready to play right away. Let's add some players in free agency. And that, it does kind of start with Goody. Go get some guys that are ready to play right now. And whether that be via free agency or the draft or anything else, let's ramp up that urgency. Let's see if he listens to his own advice or if that's just advice for everyone else and not for him. We are about to find out as this offseason gets kicked off. My gut feeling coming out of Goody's press conference, I still very much believe Jaire Alexander's gone. I believe that was mostly GM speak. He could have said the same thing he did about Brandon McManus and saying like, yes, we absolutely want him back. He's under contract. We love Jaire. You know, he's had some unfortunate luck with injuries, but he's our starting corner. It was nothing like that. But yeah, we're still going to have some conversations and yada, yada, yada. We're still looking at everything. They know. The only question I think that remains is it a trade or is it a cut? I think that's the only thing that remains. And I will say this. At this point last year, I was 1,000,000% convinced that Goody actually wanted Aaron Jones back when he said it, and that Aaron Jones would be back on the team in 2024. I am less convinced now. I'm pretty dang convinced that Jaire Alexander is going to be gone. But if you would have asked me to compare, I would have said I was more confident that Aaron Jones would have been back in 2024 than that Jaire Alexander will be gone in 2025. And I got that one wrong. So it's within the realm of possibility, but if I were definitely betting right now, I would bet pretty heavily that Jaire Alexander is not back with this team. And I got even more of that from Goody's press conference. There was even the one after where he was asked about Keyshawn Nixon, an outside corner. He's like, he's talking about all these corners and Nixon and Valentine and how they're going to play on the outside. And then he's like, oh, and of course, you know, kind of caught himself. And of course, Jaire Alexander could factor into that as well. Sure, he could. We'll see. He did mention he wants Brandon McManus back, was pretty aggressive about that, or just, you know, very open about it. Josh Myers, I felt coming out of this of like, it's a 50-50. I think they like him. I think they're going to set a price. I think Myers gets a better price elsewhere. I think he ultimately ends up with another team, but that one to me is a little bit more of a coin flip. And then Wyatt and Walker, I think you could tell that they like both of those players. I don't know that you can do the full fifth year options, but I'm very much curious if they work out something similar to what they did with Jordan Love in making a compromise. We're not going to give you your full fifth year option and guarantee everything, but we think we can find a middle ground that's beneficial for you and beneficial for us. You get a huge, you know, a pretty sizable guarantee with some incentives on top of it. We don't have to pay you the full fifth year option, but we get both of you guys for that fifth year. I think there's probably a compromise there somewhere, and that's kind of what I expect to happen. So gut feel, Jaire gone, McManus back, Myers is a coin flip, Wyatt and Walker back with fifth year something, even if it's not picking up their fifth year option, or maybe they just get contract extensions done prior to that. Meanwhile, Jason Vrabel is going to be the offensive coordinator of the national team at the Senior Bowl. Really cool opportunity for him and his ability to see some of these players up front and get some feedback to Brian Gutekunst of who impressed, who had a bad attitude, who had a great attitude, all of those things. And Vrabel will be able to report back to the scouts and Goody and company for everything he learned. That's a very positive for the Packers that Vrabel is able to do that. Last but not least, before we get to grades, some reserve future deals. Cornerback Isaiah, these are in addition to their own practice squad guys that they brought back. They signed corner Isaiah Dunn, wide receiver kick returner Tulu Griffin, cornerback Caleb Hayes, center Trey Hill, tight end Johnny Lumpkin, and defensive lineman Keith Randolph, Nesta Jade Silvera, and Leonard Payne. I have not watched a single ounce of their tape as of yet. As you can imagine, I absolutely will, and I will report back with my findings as soon as I get to that. All right, let's get to best and worst grades from the wildcard week. Lots to discuss. Some of this I'm going to go through a little bit more lightning round because, again, I think probably the statute of limitations is expired, and I think the amount of care that people have at this point is probably a little bit more minimal, but we'll go through some of these in a little bit more detail. Top graded offensive player, Josh Jacobs, plus 1.3. No surprise there. The only person who really put this team on his back and said, I'm going to carry you as far as I can carry you. Unfortunately, nobody decided to tag in when he got, tired or like to do a little of the heavy lifting with him. Just didn't get enough help. Jacobs was awesome. That big run that he had was really like the one moment in the game where for a brief moment, you're like, maybe they could actually pull this off and pull out a victory. Of course, it did not go that way, but Josh Jacobs deserves a ton of credit for how he ran in this game, how he caught the ball out of the backfield and just tried to put the team on his back. It wasn't enough, but it was not for lack of effort from Josh Jacobs. And then really, Jaden Reed plus 0.2, Romeo Doubs plus 0.15. Nothing. Jaden Reed had a couple of nice plays. He had that one play where he had the impressive catch and then broke a couple tackles and a nice run after catch after that. Romeo Doubs a couple times getting open down the field. Sometimes he didn't get the ball. He had a mostly nondescript day, so there was nothing major there, but like, that's it. Those are the positives on offense. There were not many. Again, Jacobs at 1.3 is really the only noteworthy one. Jaden had a fine game at plus 0.2 and then Romeo Doubs plus 0.15. That's it. I wish there were more. I wish there was somebody more exciting. I wish there was something more positive to talk about there. There unfortunately just was not. My bottom three players on offense, Jordan Love, negative 1.6. I'll start there. I thought the decision-making from Jordan was really poor. Just some simple stuff too. I'll give two great examples. The one where he's got the ability to step up in the pocket and run for something, and instead he sidearms a throw to Emmanuel Wilson, almost trying to do like a, I don't know if it was a no look or like do something fancy. Wilson's covered on the play. Not to mention it's a very inaccurate ball. And even if Wilson somehow catches that, he's not getting as many yards as what Jordan Love would have if he just scrambled. And he can slide, he can get down. And I know he's not 100%, doesn't want to take a hit, whatever. But like at certain, I mean, he had that awesome run earlier in the game, like what, 20 yarder at one point. So tuck the ball, dude, and just get some yards and it's going to be okay. I don't understand the little sidearm check down to Emmanuel Wilson. There's even a worse one later. It's a play where Romeo Doubs got hurt. And Love kind of buys a little bit of time, rolls left. And I mean, Josh Jacobs is in his line of like, it's his, peripheral vision, but it's clearly he's there. And Jacobs is jumping up and down. He's waving his hand. He is wide bleeping open on the left side. And he's going to pick up a good chunk of yards. Not to mention, we know Jacobs is going to, make somebody miss and probably break a couple tackles. And instead of just throwing it wide to a wide open Josh Jacobs, your best playmaker is chilling there, open. And it's not even like in the flat. It's in the flat, yes, but it's like even up a little bit. Like you're already getting yards and there's nobody near him. There's nobody near him. And instead, a jump ball into double coverage to Romeo Doubs. That's just a bad decision. And then, of course, you've got three interceptions on the day, an interception worthy play on his very first throw of the day that was not picked off, but throws high over the middle. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson gets a hand on it. There's also one a little bit later too that kind of went under discussed where he's under pressure right away and he just kind of floats it out to the running back. I don't know if it was Bond or who it was that like somebody made like a diving attempt and like came actually pretty freaking close to picking off that ball. There was also some times where I thought he didn't, again, see the field particularly well and find his receivers. This was by far and away Jordan's worst game of the season. And this was a rough one to watch for Jordan. I know the lack of practice time and maybe the injuries affected him, but this was definitely his worst game. Travis Glover, negative 1.15. You all saw it. Holding penalties, had the illegal man downfield, which wasn't really a ton his fault. But then you also had just some poor play in between that as well. And even when he got benched, he got brought back in. Even when he got brought back in, he didn't look good at the end of the game either. That was a tough performance for Travis Glover, a little bit of a welcome to the NFL moment, you know, really getting your first taste of action. I know he got a cup of coffee here and there during the season, but really his first taste of action against a really good Philly defensive line in a playoff game. That's tough, but Travis Glover was unfortunately not up to it. And then Josh Myers, -0.8, thought he had a tough game as well. Specifically, I would say, I'd say a little bit of everything. I don't think he was very good in run blocking. I didn't think he was great in pass protection. And just sort of, again, a disappointing second half of the season for Josh Myers. I thought it was a really fun first half. I know injuries played a part in this, but by the end of the season, we were sort of seeing the same old Josh Myers that we've seen year in and year out up until this point. I personally think it's time to move on. I know they love him within the organization, but just inconsistent, far too inconsistent. I think it's time to go in a different direction there. Other noteworthy offensive performances, Malik Heath, -0.7, tough day at the office for him. We heard later in the week that he ran the route at the wrong depth and just had some moments that he would very much like to have back in this one. I thought there was another, he did have a nice catch, I think down the sidelines, if I remember correctly. Overall, just not enough. Oh, he had the play in the end zone where he stumbled out of his break. That was probably going to be a touchdown if he doesn't stumble out of his break. Just a tough day for Malik Heath. Rashid Walker, -0.45. Elton Jenkins, -0.3 in limited playing time. Kadeem Telfort, -0.45. Sean Ryan, -0.7. Zach Tom, -0.75. Simply put, the offensive line just got beat up all day long. All day long. Philly's defensive front just brought it to them, and Green Bay did not have an answer. Their offensive line on the whole had a -4.6 grade. -4.6 grade for the Packers' offensive line in this one. A abysmal, brutal grade. Glover plus Jenkins plus Telfort at left guard had a -1.75 grade. The three of them combined, I think, had a -1.9 grade. There was one play that went negative for Glover on the right side, but just at left guard, -1.75 in this game at one position. Brutal there. My previous worst offensive grade for the season for the Packers was against Minnesota three weeks ago. They had a -0.45 grade on offense. This game against the Eagles, the offense as a whole rated -5.35. The lowest prior to that was -0.45 against Minnesota. This was their worst offensive grade since the Raiders game in week 5 of last year in 2023. Another juxtaposition here. They had a -5.35 offensive grade in this game against the Eagles. Their grade against the Cowboys in the wild card round last year, +10.55, a 15.9 difference in grade. 15.9. They went down 15.9 in their grade from wildcard last year to wildcard this year. That is not what you wanted to see out of this one. Jordan Love's -1.6 grade was the lowest graded offensive player all season long. I did not have a player grade lower on offense through the entirety of the year than Jordan Love's -1.6 in this game. And Travis Glover's -1.15 was tied for second worst with Josh Myers from the Vikings game a couple weeks ago. Top three players on defense, Edgerrin Cooper +0.5. Just becoming an absolute star right before our eyes. Multiple tackles that were impressive. Again, the usual teleportation ability. I thought he covered well. And I thought the really big thing here for Edgerrin, we talked about it going into the game, is listen, you're going to be able to make some plays, but you can't just go big game hunting. You've got to stay strong. I should say you have to stay focused and you've got to stay doing your job. And he did that, I thought, a huge chunk of the game. Very minimal negatives, some really impressive plays on Saquon Barkley. I thought he looked really good in this one and was very clearly the top graded defensive player, and only Josh Jacobs had a better grade on for any Packer on the day. Keyshawn Nixon +0.35, thought he tackled really well on the outside. And overall, I thought there were multiple plays where he covered really well. You know, a couple things here or there where you would like to have seen, a little bit better coverage, a little bit more, stickiness next to the wide receiver, but overall I thought he had a solid game. Nothing spectacular. He had the personal foul on teams, but outside of that, I thought defensively, which is what this grade is for, thought he had a pretty decent day. And then Carl Brooks +0.1. PFF had a much bigger grade on him. I like some of the stuff that Carl Brooks did in this game, but I also thought there were times where he got out of position and or got blown back in the run game and or struggled to get off a block. So still a net positive +0.1. And that's, again, the third highest graded player is basically a neutral player. But I still thought, Brooks had a solid game in this one. bottom three on defense. Carrington Valentine, negative 1.3. Tough day for him. Tough day in coverage. And then, of course, he got stiff-armed into oblivion by Dallas Goedert. Reports are is that he's still picking himself up out of the turf in Philly, but I like Carrington Valentine a lot. I really, really do. That was as brutal of a playoff play as you could possibly imagine. And Dallas Goedert just toyed with him, just absolutely toyed with him. So tough day for Valentine. Brenton Cox, negative 0.75. Thought he really struggled in pass as a pass rusher. Now, to be fair to Brenton Cox and the edge rushers in this one, you're not going to get tougher matchups than Jordan Mailata and Lane Johnson. It's the best offensive tackle duo in football, in my opinion, and it showed. And for a former UDFA and Brenton Cox, he just struggled to get off of blocks all day, didn't make an impact in the run game, and just really couldn't do much of anything, which led to his negative 0.75 grade. And then Evan Williams, negative 0.55, did give up the touchdown. Now, granted, Jalen Hurts had 7 days to pass on that play. So I didn't, it wasn't a super harsh grade there, but there were some really bad plays early, some really poor angles, some bad tackling. He got better as the game went on, a lot better as the game went on, but really early in this one, he really, really struggled. Noteworthy on defense, the edge position as a whole, graded negative 1.4. Carrington Valentine's negative 1.3 was the lowest graded defensive player all year long. And the negative 3.05 grade for the defense on the whole was the third lowest defensive grade of the year. Overall, the entire team had a negative 8.4 grade easily. And I mean easily their worst grade of the entire season on the whole. And it was their worst grade for me since a 27-10 loss in 2022 against the New York Jets. In that game following the international game the next week, they played the Jets, lost 27-10, looked really bad doing it. That was the worst, that was the last time they've had a grade anywhere near this bad. So they picked a really bad time to have their worst game in a long time. It was in the playoffs when you had to have it. And when you were trying to find, that next step and finally beat a good team, and they played by far and away their worst football. Now, I will say credit to the defensive grade wasn't great in this one. It was a lot of early stuff, and then they really settled into the game and got a lot better. But it's really hard to overcome some of that stuff when you don't have turnovers, a couple sacks here and there. But Green Bay's defense didn't make and generate those big plays either. Not necessary. They held in there. They battled with an offense and special teams that were abysmal in this game. So again, I'm willing to give the defense a lot bigger pass, but offense was really, really bad. And defense still had its moments, especially early on as well. Just to recap it, top three on offense, Josh Jacobs, Jaden Reed, Romeo Doubs. Bottom three on offense, Jordan Love, Travis Glover, and Josh Myers. Top three on defense, Edge Cooper, Keyshawn Nixon, and Carl Brooks. Bottom three, Carrington Valentine, Brenton Cox, and Evan Williams. That is going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. I'll be right back here tomorrow. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wayne, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handel, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Arnoldo Espinoza, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Step Keat, Love and Football, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Allison Tuckwab, Chris Reiger, Izzy Roberts, and Ian Ewing. I'll see you tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.